Killer Bees, The Wheelhouse, and Charlie Polillo all reside here. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, KFNC and KFNC HD2 Mont Bellevue, Houston. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers.
They want to be down with the king.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston Sports Radio, John and Lance.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. John and Lance, along with Aaron. And if you want to get in, hang out with us, you're more than welcome on the HR&P listener line, 713-780-3776, anytime you feel like you need to voice an opinion about what's happening. We got a lot of guests today. Yeah. Vance Bedford, former UT defensive coordinator, is going to join us. We'll talk a little UT football with him as they end the season. Well, on a high note anyway. Rick Venturi.
A very high note.
Yeah. I mean, if he Kansas a big State, yeah. it's huge. What? You wanted them going a seven-game.
You go into the season with excellence, so you start the season with excellence in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lift for the offseason.
Did you see what they're able to do to Kansas State?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Kansas State couldn't get a first down on short yardage.
No,
they got buried twice.
That you know what that shows? Heart.
Yeah, and Kansas State's quarterback was out.
Well, but it still showed heart. I mean, don't take anything away from these kids. No. They worked their ass off. Like those.
They did. Obviously, it was some hard work going on this year, according to their own coach.
Well, yeah, and you know what? It showed, and they got the win, and now they go into the offseason.
Like I said, with excellence. Excellence begat excellence. It's in the Bible.
No, that's not. Excellence is not anywhere in the Bible. Excellence is not. That's not the begatting. That didn't happen. Huh. Okay. What happened
should
was.
Be.
What's going to happen is Rick Venturi is going to join us to talk Colts football. Mm-hmm. He is their current radio analyst for the Colts.
So former head coach, former interim head coach for them.
Yeah.
Defensive coordinator. I have correspondences with him throughout the year, like mostly draft season. He'll be looking at players and he'll just put
Isn't
his opinion about a guy.
Draft season for you? Isn't
it? I mean, I'm in full, like right now, I'm in full draft season.
Right.
December is full-on draft season. I was up here last two nights. I've been up here till night before 9:30, but that's because I had like a two-hour thing. It took me out of it.
So you didn't play any golf yesterday with us?
No, I was up here draft season until 6:30. So that was my draft season yesterday. But Rick will talk about players and stuff like that and give his opinions. It's nice to get his perspective, you know. It's a good perspective. I like talking to people who've been there and done that.
Yeah. No.
So he'll give us some good perspectives on that.
Yeah, he's got some good insight on the Colts.
And I tried to get Tony Dungy.
This is a big game in the NFL.
I didn't hear back from Tony, but, you know, he would have been a great guest in the sense. I don't know if he would have been a great guest.
Tony Dungy?
Yeah, in terms of, you know, when in radio, we consider great guests who are really enthralling speakers, and you're hanging on their every words, and they're, man, what an energetic guy. I mean, Tony is low key, but Tony does have feel for, I think, how do you build a team from ground floor up? Like, what does a locker room need to be like? Because we always hear about this culture, and I think sometimes people get fed up with hearing about culture, but it's important. Like, I know you'll probably hear it so much with Nick Caserio and people in that building. But they're saying it because if you don't have it, you can't. It's hard to build championships. Sometimes you can through just sheer talent, but usually there has to be some level of culture at some beginning point for an organization, whether Green Bay Packers with Brett Favre, and then it translated to Aaron Rodgers, whether it's Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, there's just New England Patriots. There's certain organizations we consider to be culture-based. Organizations. I don't know who it is in the NBA right now. Maybe Golden State, I guess. No. The Spurs.
The Spurs.
The Spurs would be the culture-based organization there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about Golden State. And in baseball, you know, you think Astros are culture? But I feel like it.
Ooh.
Are the Astros a culture? I'm talking about more players. Don't go all the way back to Talman. I mean, the organization in general, is there a certain culture there, or is it just a collection of really good players who really like each other? Is that the same thing?
Yeah. It could be. I mean,
a lot of people leave.
Yeah, but they did bring in, you know, they had some jerks in there as well. I mean.
Well, they had Osuna.
Yeah.
Is there another one you're thinking of? Oh, Graveman?
No, not Graveman. He's a great guy.
Oh, well.
He cried when he got traded from Seattle. He cried about his teammates, not being able to see his teammates anymore. And you look at what you're doing to that thing right there.
Do great players leave the Houston Astros? No.
No, they
do
don't.
Do great guys? No. So, George, bad character guy. You had to get Greinke? George.
Is Greinke a bad guy in your opinion?
Low character guy. You had to get him out. You had to get out low character George Springer.
I don't know that anyone has ever said low character.
George Springer. Well, Zach Greinke is. I don't think Zach Greinke's high character or low character. He's Zach Greinke.
Just a character.
It's just a different. Yeah, he's in a different pod.
Yeah. Hey, we've gone 4 minutes and we haven't even mentioned a four-game win streak.
This is why I was setting it up because I was going to say it's important. You know, Houston at one point has been considered a football town,
right?
And then the Astros, you said, well, wait a minute now. Maybe this is a baseball town. But I got some news for everybody. Baseball season's over. I don't know if you heard or not. Mm-hmm. Carlos Correa may be going in a deep freeze now that we're going to have potentially a lockout. It's a basketball town. This is a basketball town. Two Western Conference finals over the last 4 years, headed in 5 years. You've got two NBA championships here, multiple WNBA championships. And now a team that is the hottest team. Okay, Suns are doing fairly well.
Whatever.
17 straight wins. But the second hottest team in all of basketball, and the one that has everyone buzzing, is your Houston Rockets.
You're damn
Four game win streak. Oh, I can tell you this, Oklahoma State never wants to see Houston again because we own Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City.
Right.
Well, don't let Oklahoma State bring their basketball team in either. They're going to get their asses kicked.
Yeah, don't do that.
Jalen Green has been here for none of the 4-game win streak. They seem to be playing their best basketball. I'm sure it's a coincidence. KPJ limping around out of here in the fourth quarter on a 10-point turnaround. Rockets down 10 in the down 7 at half.
In the second half.
Yeah, right. Down 7 at half, down 10 in the fourth quarter. Christian Wood hurt out in the fourth quarter. You've got Thies and Şengün. And the star of the game was Jae'Sean Tate. 32 points, 5 block shots.
10 rebounds.
5 blocks, 10 rebounds. Jae'Sean Tate is turning into athletic Draymond Green. And I absolutely love it. Love watching Jae'Sean Tate play. And I actually, John, called Mason, who's my biggest basketball fan in the family. I said, Mason, because I wanted him to see part of the fourth quarter with me, because I want to get them into this Rockets team. Like I want and Mason knows all the teams.
This isn't their team. There was no Christian Wood. There was no KPJ. There was no Jalen Green.
Good. It's the Rockets.
It's the Rockets.
Yeah,
but
it's
this
a team.
Is not what. This is not the rebuild.
How did they win? They won because of team basketball. Internal right. The high low game.
But as soon as those guys come back, that's all over. Back to the 16-game losing streak.
Oh, Christian Wood's been part of it.
Yeah, Christian Wood has been part of it.
Kevin Porter Jr. has been part of it.
They won't give him the ball. He's standing there going, hey, guys,
yesterday,
KPJ, I'm over here.
Yesterday was all hands on deck, guys playing really hard on the defensive end, gang rebounding on the defensive boards, challenging multiple shots. Garrison Matthews hustling down to make a hard foul was that they had to review to see if it was a flagrant. That play in and of itself showed the level of intensity that a game that featured a 4-16 team versus a 6-14 team. And I said, man, this is like playoff level intensity in this game. And with the fans, and someone else said, Lance, let's maybe call it like play-in game intensity.
Well, not. It's 15. It's who's getting out of the basement. It's basement intensity.
I know, but the intensity in the game was not what you would expect for two low win total teams.
Yeah.
And I was just so excited for the Rockets to have that level of hustle, of defense, of making team plays that were... I mean, they kept... Even when there was a time when Oklahoma City was hitting big threes to kind of stem the tide, and Houston just kept fighting back. That was a really good win yesterday. I know it's against a 6-win team and all that stuff, but that 4-game win streak, like you could tell, it really mattered to that team. And good for Steven Silas, who's had almost nothing to get excited about so far since he's been a Rocket.
Yeah.
Nothing. And now he's finally got something that he can be excited about. He's even doesn't even have his mask on during postgame. Like, I just felt like I could show my face. I didn't want y'all to see what I look like because this basketball has been pretty embarrassing for a while.
Well, now I can show my face again. And listen, this is, and you know what? There's a big difference when those guys aren't there. And, you know, they're going to be the future. Jalen Green is probably going to be really good, and it's going to be just fine. KPJ, we'll see what happens there. Christian Wood might not. He might only be here for another year after this. We'll see.
Oh, long term, yeah.
Yeah, he's only got a 3-year deal, so this is the second year of it. So we'll see whether or not he is actually part of the rebuild. But look at the difference when they shoot the ball. Oh, my goodness. They shot 40% from three. 40%, 50% from the field. It's actually watchable. It's actually watchable when they're not just running down and chucking up just terrible shots.
Look, I mean, this is the truth, and I don't want to put it all on this guy, but, you know, between Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green.
Well, you're whispering now. I know you don't want to put it on.
That's a sign that you really don't want to say this
or you don't want them to hear this?
I don't know what it is, but I feel like I need to say it quietly because I don't like that I'm saying this out loud, but those guys take really bad shots. Yeah. They can't really shoot that
well,
great.
And they don't run an offense, really.
No, and listen, they weren't really running an offense yesterday either. There weren't sets that had flow that were running plays.
No, they got it down to Jay Sean Tate. Let him shoot. Well, let him make a basket or get fouled and go to the free throw line. You know what? That's a good point.
They were but in their comeback in the fourth quarter is people penetrating the basket when they either finished or when there was a swarm, they were kicking it to other players who were driving. It wasn't a kick out for threes. They were driving and getting a ball in the paint, you know, interior passing and finishing. So, look, for those of you who didn't watch it, I get it. But I'm just telling you, for those of us who did watch it, it was fun to see a young team compete. Like, this was the example of what I was thinking we were getting with the Rockets this year, which is, you know what? They're going to be kind of fun to watch because they're going to, you know, all this stuff that I was saying before the year started, and really a lot of us were saying was, I think that they may not win a lot, but they're going to be fun to watch. Yesterday was a fun to watch game.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah. This was more fun. And wow.
Jay Sean Tate, 32 points, 9 of 10 free throws, 11 of 15 from the field, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 blocks, 2 steals.
Yeah.
That's a big game. 7, 5, and 2.
Best game ever. He's ever played. Best game he's ever played.
Easily.
And look at Garrison Matthews. He was plus 13. Daniel Tice, plus 12. Amani Brooks, plus 15. Kenyon Martin Jr., 0, plus minus. The rest of the guys are, you know, and not great plus minus. Jay Sean was only plus 6 with the game that he had.
Well, they needed the fourth quarter. The guys who were in the game in the fourth quarter were the plus.
Were the plus, basically. Yeah.
Yep. You just read guys that... A
41-point fourth quarter to win it 114-115.
They ended up with 41 in the fourth?
In the fourth. How about that?
No overtime either. They were scoring on damn near every possession.
And a huge basket. But first, Eric Gordon didn't shoot well, but he shot at the end. He made a huge three. And then Jay Sean with a huge basket as well in the lane. You know what? Jay Sean just said, give me the ball. I'm going to win this game for us. So Rick Ventura is going to join us at 45 after. Pat 40 at 8:30, Dana Holgerson at 8:45. Chris Moneymaker is going to be with us at 9:15 today. And then 9:30 is going to be 5-star. We'll talk a little poker with Chris Moneymaker.
Well, you better do something with the culture map, guys.
We're going to have to figure that out. But Chris Moneymaker changed the face of an entire sport.
Does he have something going on?
No.
Well, that's just random. You said Chris Moneymaker is going to join us.
Chris Moneymaker is going to join us. He changed an entire sport.
But it feels random. Does he have something? Did you see him somewhere? Or?
No. Uncle Freddie saw him. Uncle Freddie knows him. No, he's not going to be drunk like Mike Mattisau was.
I don't know. Freddie's lined us up. But Mike Mattisau was just also...
was one of the greatest,
the most memorable, terrible interviews in radio history.
Ever.
I'm going to sue these people because I fell down and almost had a chair almost jammed all the way up my rectum. Like, wait, what?
What?
I'm going to sue them. What?
Well, yeah, I think he did, too.
I think he did sue
I think him. He did. He's sober now. I saw him, actually, when I played.
He played
in the table next to me.
You don't know if he's sober now.
Well, no, not right now. But I'm pretty sure Chris Moneymaker's sober. It's not a coin flip. It's not a coin flip.
Uncle Freddie lines up a random poker player. It could be a drunk.
Never. Now, why is it every poker player is drunk?
Well, just because you don't do the people a good. You do the poker community a disservice. That's why.
Well, you didn't see me yesterday after the round. Oh, did
I'm
you?
Sure you're totally sober.
Oh no! We had a good time in the post award ceremony.
I had a good time talking to Stephen Schell before the tournament and then after. As a matter of fact, Stephen Schell's with Texas Custom Patios. Their business has just been going crazy. I didn't realize he'd been in business for like, my gosh, something like 15 years. Or he started a while back, and it took a while to get the company exactly how he wanted. But I'm the one who found him. I wanted a patio built at my house, and in 2016. Texas Custom Patios was the company that I found online that I really love their work. And if you go to TexasCustomPatios.com, you can see the before and afters. They've done thousands of projects in the Dallas area, in the Houston area. Next year, they're going to be in the Austin area. And the work that they do is really second to none. They are able to build out outdoor kitchens, outdoor living spaces, a place for you to watch TVs. They can put multiple TVs in. You want a fireplace, they can do a fireplace. Pretty much anything you can conceive of, they will build for you. But in most cases, you may not be able to conceive of it. They can design it, show it to you in these CAD systems that give you a lifelike rendering, and you can be on your way to your own life, your own real life oasis right there in your backyard. They'll finance it for you, and you will enjoy your time with the patios and the structures from Texas Custom Patios. Check out TexasCustomPatios.com or go to TCPLance.com and you can see what my backyard looked like before and after. It's a big deal. Texas Custom Patios.
Stay tuned for more John and Lance on ESPN 97.5.
Hey, time to talk right now about Chastain Ford. My peeps were out there yesterday. They had the Bronco out there. It cannot be nicer. Everybody wants the Bronco. Everybody loves the Bronco. You can get the ragtop. You can get the hardtop. It is just gorgeous. Everybody that was out there had to check it out, sit in it, look at it. It was awesome. And thanks to Chastain. Thanks to Allie and Justin and you guys that were out there. We really appreciate it. They brought a Yeti cooler with the wheels on it. Holy cow, gave that away. That was just awesome. They gave a team away. The guy... they gave away yesterday. It's just what they do. It's just the kind of people that they are. It's just the niceness that there is over at Chastain Ford. I'm telling you, when you go into Chastain Ford, it's just people that you can trust. It's people that you know you're going to get a great deal from. They treat everybody the same. Everybody is the same. Everybody's going to get the best deal they can possibly get from Chastain Ford because they want you back. They want you telling your neighbors about it. They want everybody to come to Chastain Ford. So they're going to do the best job they possibly can to get you in that Ford car or truck at the best price they possibly can. Do it all online at Chastain Ford. They'll come to your home. They'll bring the car to your home. Or you can go to the dealership. It's on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead, just 5 minutes from downtown. It is Chastain Ford.
Patrolling the Houston sports radio scene for 20 years. Well, minus a few years where Lance took a little detour. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Yeah, we had a great time yesterday at Wildcat Golf Club. I got a little lippy I used some bad words. Got my work blue in the post-game award ceremony a little bit. So I want to apologize to everybody. But once I'm a few Coors Lights in, I'm probably going to work blue. Okay. So that's why I have to probably not drink Coors Lights before the show in the morning here.
For you to say this, was it pretty bad?
Well, it was, yeah, I don't know. It was, yeah.
What do you mean you got lippy? What is that?
Well, I mean, I just got a little loose.
Did anyone from the station say something to you at some point?
No. Okay. No. Todd, I just saw Todd over in the corner and just shaking his head going, oh, shouldn't have said that. Oh, well. So to anybody I may have offended, I don't care. So we got a lockout now. We got a lockout. Lockout has officially begun.
Good.
Carlos Correa does not come to terms with any. Marcus Stroman goes to the Cubs. Now, the Cubs, it's interesting. Mark Berman tweeted out yesterday the Cubs were one of the teams interested in Carlos Correa that has been talking to his agent. The Red Sox, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Cubs, and one other team. Does anybody remember what the other team? You guys remember? with the other team. There was another team anyway. But the Cubs are kind of interesting. They suck. They gave away their whole team at that last trade deadline. So I don't know that that would be somewhere that would be. Carlos had said, I don't mind going to a rebuilding place. Carlos wants to get paid. He wants to get paid. You know what? If he was thinking about going to the Rangers, which I think he was, although the Rangers didn't make him an offer, you know, if you go to Detroit, you'll go just about anywhere, right? As long as they're paying you that $300
million. You hate to hear that it's just about the most money possible.
Well, no, obviously he wants to win, but he has said if they're in a rebuilding, if they got a good plan, I don't mind doing that.
I think it's interesting that who has let's hear from, as a matter of fact, let's hear from Buster Olney. He was on with the Wheelhouse.
I believe it
was the Wheelhouse Killer Bees yesterday.
He was on with the Wheelhouse.
Yeah, he was on with the Wheelhouse yesterday. He talked about Corey Seager being Corey Seager right now at $325 million.
He wins the offseason.
Is the guy that got a hell of a deal. And Buster Olney joined the guys to talk about Carlos Correa, and he's not so sure that Carlos Correa ends up becoming the top-paid shortstop.
Mm-hmm. I did a piece, actually, that came out in mid-October examining the elite shortstops, and the people I was talking to were saying they thought Seager would get more than Carlos. Carlos had a phenomenal postseason. It was like he had an audition tape with the hits and the defense and the leadership that he was demonstrating on the field, but all along there are questions about his lower back, you know, that he's gotten treatment on. And I don't know if that's impacting. From what I understand, at some point during the process, what teams are being told was is that they could only access that information if they made a significant offer. And I think there was a feeling among the teams that, like, you know, hey, is this a chicken or the egg? Like, we're not going to make a significant offer until we know exactly what's going on with his lower back. And I don't know if that's affected what's happened, but the people I talked to did not expect that Carlos was going to get more than Seager was.
So this is, I want to go into this. I experience this stuff whenever I do draft stuff, and here's how it happens. Mel Kiper's, McShay's, whatever the national narrative is on a player, you'll hear a player is way up here, right? This guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like Spencer Rattler, for example, even early in the year. And then once I watch tape and I see something, I'm like, wait a minute. And then I start talking to NFL personnel people who are doing the same thing and they do it for a living. You start realizing sometimes narratives can drive a perceived value of a player. You know, for example, in the draft, you think a guy is going to be, is this good and is going to be drafted this high. But then once the people who are putting the time in and the work in, who have to do it for a living, once they get in there, you know, they'll tell you something different. And sometimes your eyes, and sometimes you already had the same feel. And I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, but you and I have talked about Carlos Correa for a long time.
Yeah.
Before the season, during the season, after the season. On several occasions, we have talked about back issue. He has only had, you know, two seasons where he's really hit like a player that you would want to pay money to, has had issues with injuries. You know, all the things that we're saying, we're all legitimate, and they are all legitimate. And I think what we're seeing right now potentially is our narrative gets excited. You know, we get excited because Carlos is an elite defender. He was healthy. He had a good season. He's got great leadership. He comes up clutch. But all the other things that we've talked about, John, Major League Baseball teams are talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
They're not outrageous things to bring up. They're actual concerns that are playing into the marketplace for a shortstop that we have probably gotten ahead of ourselves on narrative. And this is why the Astros sit back and say, no, we're not going to do something crazy like this. Now,
you know, what's the rumor? However, I thought, you know what? I've always thought, you know, Carlos is a good hitter. Not a great hitter. He's not a great hitter. He has a lot of ups and downs. He had an 833 OPS coming into the season, but Lindor got $341 million for 830. They had exactly the same OPS.
But it doesn't mean you, if the Mets jump off a cliff, do you jump off
the
cliff? It's the same thing our moms told
us. That's set the market.
I understand. That can be the market. That's not your market. If you're a smart team, that's not your market.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, it's baseball. And baseball, guess what? Monkey see, monkey do.
Yeah, and monkey and lockout.
Yeah, well, guess what? Corey Seager, 325. Corey Seager ain't a $325 million player.
No. Well, that's what you either want to. So you either want to be house poor, right? That you, you want to be house poor where you're struggling to pay all your bills, you got the house of your dreams, but you can't, you know, you're it's difficult to make ends meet. No, you don't want to, you know, that's not a smart move in life. That's not a smart move in baseball. Don't put, if you know, why would you overpay so substantially? I get the emotional attachment and you don't want to lose your best players. But at some point, you have to trust your process of player development, drafting, and being able to win with other players and putting a team out there. And once you are comfortable like that, and I think that's where Jeff Luhnow was. I think that's where James Click is. And that's why they do it for a living, and we don't. The teams who don't, the teams who can't, they panic and overbuy and overspend,
yeah.
Like the Rangers.
Yeah.
Teams like the Astros say, that's going to suck to lose George, but you know, we'll see how Jake Meyers and Chaz McCormick can do. Well, that's going to suck to lose Carlos, but we'll, you know, we'll see how this shortstop or this, you know, how Pedro Leon does or how, you know, Peña does or whoever is going to step into the role next at any position along their lineup. They always have faith that they can get it done.
No. Absolutely. We got to take a break because we got Vance Bedford going to join us in just a second here. We'll get back to baseball talk in a little bit, but we got a full board today, man. We got a lot of guests that we're going to get to, including Vance Bedford on the other side. You Longhorn fans might want to listen in and see what he has to say about this club. In the meantime, let's talk right now about GimmeTheVIN.com. That's John Clay Wolf. If you're looking for the best way to sell your car, there's one way to do it. It's John Clay Wolf. He is going to, now he's going to say some silly stuff, isn't he? He's always going to say something that you're like, that was interesting what he just said, but that's okay because he's giving me more money for my car. Are you worth it? That's the thing, right? John Clay Wolf is worth it. John Clay Wolf is worth it because he gives you more money. It was ridiculous how much he gave me for Frankie's car. It was a piece of crap. It was destroyed. She played bumper cars with it. And then he came up with a number. I was like, okay, yeah, you can have it for that. Absolutely. Whatever. And that's what I got. And if you're looking for that kind of deal on a car now, I mean, you can't have a really, really crappy car and think he's going to give you a ridiculous amount of money like he did me. I don't know. Maybe he will. I don't know, but you at least got to try. At least go to GimmeTheVIN.com and be armed with the numbers that your car is worth, okay? Well, if you're going to the dealership, you're going to the CarMax, you want to sell it, and be armed with the best number that you can possibly get at GimmeTheVIN.com. That's GiveMeTheVIN.com.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Welcome back to The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back. 7:30, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Vance Bedford, former Texas defensive coordinator, joining us now. Talk a little college football, see what Vance is up to. Coach, welcome to the show. How are you? Coach, you there?
This is Vance.
Yes. How you doing, Coach?
Don't love myself.
Good, good. We got you on the radio here. You know, I don't even know. We're sitting here playing Texas Fight. Maybe Coach doesn't want you to play Texas Fight, Aaron. How about that? I don't know. They always say, you know, there's certain schools, well, once a this, always a this. When you're a coach, like there's a lot of players, like Maurice Jones-Drew, when I talk to, like, he's always Jaguar. No matter where he played, you know, he's a Jaguar. When you're a coach, though, You coach at so many different places. Do you feel a lingering attachment to any of the schools where you coached?
University of Michigan, boy, I mean, place else. I was there for 5 years.
Yeah.
Won a national championship there. Had Charles Woodson won the Heisman, and he and I are still pretty close.
Well, and how about Blue this weekend? What a game. One of my favorite games to watch the entire year. It was just nice back and forth between the two teams. And then it just kind of morphed into smash mouth football in that second half with Michigan getting after it. It was, you know what, I actually felt good for Jim Harbaugh getting that win. That was one where the pressure on him was so immense.
It really was. It was when he needed to win. And I'm doing a little podcast for those guys. I break down some video for them. And I told those guys, this was a year that overall as a team, the quarterback playing well, the offense is running the football, and the defense is really good this year. This could be a year for them, and turn out to be that way. They just got to win Saturday. If they do that, then that'll be icing on the cake.
Coach Vance Bedford with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You had stints at Oklahoma State, a couple of them. You had a stint at Texas. You can't be too bummed about what's happening at Oklahoma right now. And I don't imagine you're a big Ohio State or Oklahoma fan with your ties to Michigan and those other schools.
I'm an Oklahoma State fan. I mean, I walked down two different occasions. I still know a few of the coaches there. And you know what? It was a great weekend. And all of them would have won. That was just like having five of a kind because, you know, the little brother won the game this past weekend. And they were close. So Michigan won. Oklahoma State won. Auburn would have won. That would have been really a outstanding weekend.
And if he doesn't go out of bounds, Tank doesn't go out of bounds, they do win that football game. That's a shame that Auburn couldn't get that one. Vance Bedford with us. You know, yeah, you're an Oklahoma State guy. You know my guy, Chad Clay. That's my boy right there. I know you guys are boys. Coach, what about what's happening, what happened this year over at Texas and what, and now a transition of possibly going into the SEC? How do you see it? Do you think they're ready to go now or should they? Do you think they should wait to get into the them in Oklahoma wait to get to the SEC?
They are not ready to go right now. I mean, I coached at Florida for 2 years, and I've kept up with Florida and people in that conference. I've got one of my buddies at Tennessee and some other places in that conference. They're not ready for that. You know, up front, offensive line wise, defensive line wise, they're not big enough or physical enough or athletic enough to play in that conference. And they go in there. They played Arkansas, and Arkansas will look after Texas pretty good. Arkansas is a middle-of-the-road team in that conference. So if you're going to struggle versus a middle-of-the-road team, now you start saying we're going to play Georgia, and we're going to play Alabama, and we're going to play Florida and LSU. And I hate to sit even at A&M right now. We're not ready for that.
That's right. You know, how does this – I guess the one thing that's really confusing, Coach, is you see the recruiting rankings, and you can't just say recruiting rankings are always wrong because they're not. I mean, a lot of teams have 4- and 5-star talent, and Alabama does just fine with them. What is it about these recruiting classes that are highly regarded from Texas, but then just they don't end up panning out to the extent that they do at a lot of other schools?
I always say sometimes who put the stars on all these guys?
Right, that's true.
That's the first thing you look at. It's not coaches. The next thing is, for example, being at Texas, we had a guy, for example, he was a 3-star guy. He committed to us, and next week he became a 4-star guy. So a lot of times when you commit to a certain school, your rankings go up. And I always looked at this and say, you go back when Tom Osborne was at Nebraska, he never had a top 10 recruiting class, but he looked for a tough, hard-nosed guy that loved the game of football. He wanted those type of guys. And Mac Brown told Charlie Strong this, you're going to get guys. Make sure you get the right guy to fit what you want. The recruiting classes are for the fans. So you got to make sure you get the right guys. You know, every year, Alabama, there are a lot of guys who transfer out of Alabama, but you never hear about it because they win all the time. There are a lot of guys every year that transfer out of Alabama who are not good enough to play there.
Vance Bedford with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. A couple of things about that. I remember when Kevin Sumlin was at Houston, he'd say, if I recruit a kid, if he's a 4-star, as soon as he commits to the University of Houston, he becomes a 2-star because, you know, he can't be that good if he's going to come over here. And that, on the other side, you mentioned not ready. You know, Dana took he said when he went from West Virginia from the Big East into the Big 12, he said, man, it took a few years to get the right players in there. What are the right players to get in? What do they have to do differently at Oklahoma and Texas to get players that will be SEC ready?
Yeah, I just looked at the size. While I was watching Oklahoma this year, for example, I just didn't think they were good on defense because they're not big enough. They're undersized. When you go watch Georgia, Auburn, LSU, Alabama play football, look how big they are front on the defensive line, also with the linebackers. And when you come look at Oklahoma and Texas, they don't compare size-wise. They walk out of the tunnel. You know, it looks like a 6'18 compared to a 4'18. So physically on paper, they don't look the same right now. And to be honest, when I watch all those teams play, they don't play like those guys do. They don't play like their hair's on fire. I look at Texas kids, and I thought this year was going to be a really good job. I really did. I got caught up in all the recruiting rankings. I said, Tom, let these guys and players. Well, they didn't play that way. A lot of the kids that were in those higher-end classes, they're not playing, or they transfer out, or they quit playing altogether. So I'm going to show you, be careful about falling into that trap about these guys at one time.
Why has it been this way, Coach? Why under Charlie Strong and then Tom Herman, and now under Sark, the same thing. It seems like you're getting these five-star players at Texas, and yet they don't live up to it. What is there any explanation? It's been going on for years now.
Well, I look at some of the classes. One of the classes that Charlie recruited that Herman had, I think that one of those classes, about eight of those guys were only playing the league out of one class. And at the same time, Herman won 10 games with those guys. I mean, so we never had a top five recruiting class with the fans, so we couldn't recruit, but a lot of those guys helped Herman win 10 games. So from that standpoint, the guys Herman, if you look at what he did every year, had to put it this way, the talent that he was supposed to recruit, he didn't win 10 games with any of those guys. And now, a lot of those guys who transferred out of there apparently are not good enough to play, and that's what Sark has. And so he's struggling right now with those guys, and he has to get in some guys who love the game of football. And I'm really sad that some of the guys that decided to transfer out, yeah, new head coach, new opportunity, stay at Texas and play. I think Rob Babers put it the right way. He said, are you coming to play at Texas, or are you coming to play for Texas? And right now, you got guys coming to play at the place. When I played there, and some other guys I played with, they came to play for the University of Texas. It meant a lot to all of us that we go out and we win for Texas and we go win for each other. I don't have that same feeling for kids today. They like putting on a uniform. They like going out and hanging out on 6th Street and that type of thing. But that same love that a lot of guys I played with have for Texas, I don't sense that anymore.
You know, now if you say that, you just... You know, you're okay, boomer. Oh, that's old mentality. Get off my lawn. But I mean, it's the reality of the best teams have players who get out there and play for dogs. You know, who play, that you have dogs. I mean, you have dogs that love the game, and I know that at the highest level in the NFL, they're looking for guys who have high football character, meaning you do what it takes in the weight room, you do what it takes on the practice field. The game matters to you, not just on Saturdays, but it matters Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And I think that's a culture building thing that you have to find. But I think it's also, Coach, maybe finding the right one, two, or three guys who turn it around. Alonzo Highsmith's a friend of both of ours, and he talked about he was part of the class that turned around culture at Miami, where expectations were different and how you went about it was different. And it builds on that.
I would totally agree with that. And I was hit up a couple of people this year. I said, who are the two best players on the University of Texas football team? One of them is from California. And your running back, Bijan, is from Arizona. Now, we talk about how great Texas high school football is. How is that possible that the two best players are from different states? You know what I see in those two guys? Their attitudes. They're trying to come to the University of Texas and show that they play just as good a football in those other states. They have a chip on their shoulder. I hate to say it, a lot of Texas high school kids, they come to Texas and say, I've already arrived. Well, that's the first step. You haven't arrived. That's just the first step. Now you got to start all over again. And I think that's part of the issue sometimes you get into is that guys start thinking, oh, I made it. I got the uniform on. I got the horn on, the helmet, all of that. It's done. Guys from other states have a different attitude. I've always said this, not trying to tell Charlie this. You need to recruit out of state. Every year you need to get anywhere from 2 to 4 kids in a 25-man recruiting class from out of state of Texas to get a good mixture and different attitude and different flavor on your football team. And we didn't do that.
That's Vance Bedford right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coach, great visiting with you. We appreciate it. Thanks for hanging with us this morning.
Well, I appreciate you calling me, and because I'm always going to be a Longhorn, and I do a little podcast for the University of Michigan. Keep up with those guys, so I'm going to be a Longhorn the rest of my life.
What's the name of the podcast?
It's 247. It's Sam Webb. He does that recruiting, and I break down the defense for him. I do about 6 telestrations, and it normally comes on either Wednesday or Thursday, and it's on Twitter. So his name is Sam Webb, and I would enjoy it.
Sam Webb, 24/7.
I would love to do something with Texas, but they have never called him. But the University of Michigan has, so it kind of tells you what things stand with guys from Fred Akers' class.
And you started at Texas '77. You ended at Texas in '16, yeah. and And no call after that. That's unbelievable, that's but Texas. I guess that's the way it goes.
Hey, Coach, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for hanging with us.
I appreciate it.
There's Vance Bedford right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. When we come back, Rick Venturi, we're talking
Colts football. Do we only line up defensive coordinators?
That's it.
Where's the love for offensive guys? Dana Holgorsen later. Yeah. Well, he's gone from being air raid guy to running game and play defense ball, guy. Like, he's getting kicked out of the air raid club.
Yeah.
He's kicked out of the air. And then Pat Forty probably loves defense.
Yeah. No, he's all about defense.
Five-star, probably playing a bunch of unders today. He's going to join us.
Yeah, right.
What is this?
Right. Where's and this, Chris Moneymaker.
Where's the point?
He's going to play conservative.
Is he a grinder? Is he not aggressive?
No, he's a grinder.
Wow. Yeah. What is it, man? Let's get it going. Maybe we need to loosen this up with some tequila.
What?
Maybe some Maestro Dobel will get this thing going. We can start flinging it around and get the points going. Maestro Dobel is actually a sophisticated tequila. It's one of the reasons I like speaking for him. You can do shots with Maestro Dobel if you choose to do them. I can tell you this, though. There's different varietals. Like the silver that they have, to me, is great for the cocktails. But also, if you like smoky cocktails, that's where I use the Reposado or the Añejo. They have the Cristalino, which is the Diamante, which I think is perfect for a sipping tequila. If that's what you like to do, is you love the flavors, 100% blue agave, 11 generations of tequila makers are putting this together for you, and you are tasting a delicious tequila, and it's a Cristalino, which is a new varietal that they're the ones who basically created this variety, and it's charcoal filtered, three different types of tequila, and the end result is the Diamante, and it is spectacular. For all of the different types of Maestro Dobel products, make sure that you go to anywhere where fine liquors are sold. It's Maestro Dobel.
This is The Bench. The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
The Bench!
Tell them again!
The Bench!
Stay tuned for more John and Lance coming up in a few minutes.
Can't wait!
Time to talk about my peeps over the Golden Nugget. Man, I am so excited. So Lance and Tyler both are, yo, you're going to the Nugget? Okay, I want to go. You know why? Because when you go to the Nugget, man, you're like, I want to go back there. I want to do that again. Yeah. I mean, you can't have better hotel. I mean, the hotel is so nice. So nice. It's brand new. You got the hotel. You got all of the restaurants. I think they got 9 restaurants there, including Grotto and Vic and Anthony's. And it just can't be better. They got Claim Jumper that's open 24 hours. Everything. It just can't be better. The casino is awesome. Now you got the DraftKings Sportsbook that's opened up. You got the pool. You got the golf course. We're bringing the clubs. We're going to play. I'm telling you, if you're looking for just the best time, it's just 2 hours and 15 minutes down the road in Lake Charles. You don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to spend all of that money. It's gas money, okay? And if you have an electric car, it's even cheaper. So if you're looking for a great, great time, and you're looking for great fun, and it's so much more convenient, it's all at the Golden Nugget, Lake Charles.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, this is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. Texans Colts this Sunday in one of the biggest games in NFL history. These two going at it. It just doesn't get any bigger. Rick Venturi joining us here to talk about this big game. See what's going on Colts-wise. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good, and I know you're being very facetious, but for the Colts at 6-6 with a very muddled AFC wild card plan, it is a huge game. It really is a huge game, and you know, basically the Colts are in a de facto playoffs right now, and so any slip up or any inability now to beat some good teams will cost them a spot in the dance. So, you know, this is certainly big in Indianapolis.
Oh no, absolutely! You guys are in the hunt. You guys they're playing great football. I thought you had the Bucs last week. Man, oh man, oh man! Just how much did Frank catch for not running the football more?
Well, you know, I mean, and you're exactly right. I mean, it just was so, you know, covering these games, I'm exhausted. I mean, because, you know, particularly in the three that we've lost and we've blown the double digit leads, you know, it's just a roller coaster. I mean, you start out on tremendous highs, you hit valleys, you come back and rally and go again because they do have a lot of heart, and then it's totally deflating at the end. You know, Frank has taken tremendous tremendous criticism in town. And most of you know I'm not a company man, but I'll defend him most of the way on this. You know, I think the 26 passes in a row, in a way, is a real misrepresentation. First of all, Lance, 14 of them were in a tremendous 2-minute drive that got us down and got us in the end zone and only left 20 seconds left for Tom Brady, you know, which gave us 28 points, which is one of the finest first halves that we've ever played, around here in years as a Colt team. And we really did not successfully run the ball at all in the first half. And all the pundits that are killing him, first of all, they've never coached an NFL game. They don't know a double sink, five-man double sink safety up from an Indy car, to be honest with you. And, you know, they are misrepresenting that because we could not move it against Tampa, and Tampa's weakness is outside the numbers. At corner, we exploited it, and the pundits weren't crabbing when Wentz had 130 passer rating at the half, you know, 28 points and almost 200 yards passing. So in reality, what happened in the third quarter is we came out moving the football, I might say, and there were only 10 plays that are either first down or second and medium, which I refer to as unknown downs. If you're at second and 20 and second and 15, Taylor's not a factor anyway. And in those 10 plays, three of them were passes to him, which against Tampa, a swing pass and a screen is like a run. One was to Hines. And then the bone of contention was, well, the RPOs, there were four RPOs out of the 10. And we all know that on first down, an RPO in the National Football League is basically a pass. I mean, the people aren't playing cover two on first down particularly. But the irony is three out of four of them were successful. And then the two other plays were a long interception and the sack fumble. The sack fumble really was the game changer, I think, much more than the play calling. And then our defense's inability to stop anybody in the fourth quarter. This defense is now ranked 30th in fourth quarter points given up. And we have blown three double-digit leads by not being able to stop people in the second half, and that's the difference in our season. Our season would be 9-3 and not 6-6.
This is going to be a very painful season. If you make the playoffs, you might say, well, playoff positioning. But if you make the playoffs, that stuff ends. If you don't make the playoffs, there is going to be so many what ifs in the offseason.
Yes.
What about this is also a time where, you know, the Carolina Panthers had to see what they had in Sam Darnold, and I think they kind of know now. The Colts are in the same boat with, we're going to make a deal for Carson Wentz, but we want to see what we have in Carson Wentz. Rick, with what you've seen, do you have a feel for, is this still kind of the exploratory phase with who is Carson Wentz in the long term for the Colts?
Well, to me, it is not. I mean, to me, this is a kid that has played, you know, almost nearly like he played in 2017. This is not the Carson Wentz of 2020, which made this which makes that problematic. He's 12th in the league in QBR. He's thrown the long ball. He's escaped. He's beloved by his teammates. Very, very smart at the line of scrimmage. Honest to God, the Colts are fourth in scoring, 11th total. I mean, that really isn't a problem. And really, the touchdown turnover ratio is way down. I know the turnovers bit them. It really bit him Sunday, but overall he's protected the football. I like the deal when we made it. I thought we would get something between the 217 Wentz and the 219 Wentz. I always thought the 220 was an anomaly, but I, honest to God, as I watch him every day out there, I see a kid that is much closer to that 217 Wentz when he was in the MVP candidate. Now, I think there's a part of him that, and I think Frank does a really good job, I think because he believes he can win on every down, I think there is a part of him where you have to keep him within himself, or I like to say on the reservation, because he will occasionally force it. But really one interception was a Hail Mary, which really shouldn't count, and the other was a 50-50 ball to Pittman. And if you're going to take some shots, which we are doing with him, which we haven't done since Andrew Luck, you know, you're going to get some downfield picks. I mean, you also got to go up and get the ball. So I think they're set. I really think they're set. I think the deal is going to go down as one of the real good ones for this franchise.
We're talking with Rick Venturi, color analyst for the Indianapolis Colts, right here on ESPN 97.5, take on the Texans. Rick, did they use T.Y.? I mean, if T.Y. could play the Texans every week, then he'd be the greatest receiver in NFL history. But otherwise, I know Pittman has emerged as the guy. Did they use him enough? Could they use him more like maybe Tyreek Hill gets used in Kansas City?
Well, you know, you'd like to say that. You'd like to make that comparison, but I don't think it is a comparison. T.Y. has really struggled health-wise. I mean, you know, it just seems like every time he gets banged around, you know, he's out of the game for 2 weeks. You know, he hasn't been nearly as explosive. Now, he has played 2 weeks in a row and has shown a little bit of life, and you guys know that. You alluded to it already. He's been a Texan killer. So, you know, I'm sure he's going to be ready to play in Houston. Pittman has emerged as the number one. For the Colts to go anywhere, though, Pittman has to be a factor. Somebody has to be a factor. Now, we got a big play out of Doolin last week. But the biggest issue that the Colts will have going forward offensively is everybody knows Jonathan Taylor is as special can get as a running back. And Pittman is solid. I don't know that he's great, but he's solid. But people can take away two elements. And so it's going to be really important in this final five games that we establish who and when are the number twos. Who are the number twos and number threes? And can they win for you? Can they make enough plays to win for you? Because as a defensive coordinator, you can normally take away one or two elements. When you get to 3, 4, and 5, something's got to give.
That's Rick Venturi. He is former defense coordinator, former interim head coach with the Colts. He is an Indianapolis Colt guy. He does the color broadcast. He is not a company man. And I will tell you that because Ballard said, oh, Rick, I love Rick. He'll bust my balls. We'll go back and forth. Oh, I'll tell Rick. You don't know Rick. He's good, though, Lance. He's good. And Rick and I like to talk a little draft from time to time as well. Well, listen, you're not going to see a very good football team from the Houston Texans, but they do play hard with their fronts. They usually give you a good half of football, but the Colts right now are in must-win territory. Yeah. The Texans are just trying to figure out who's going to be on the roster next year. So it'll be interesting to see what version of the Texans you get, because I think we'll see the best version of the Colts this Sunday at Energy Stadium. Rick, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it, and good luck the rest of the way.
All right, and there's nobody I respect more than Chris. And we do bang one another around a little bit, so we enjoy it all the way. And, you know, if he hadn't signed off on me doing this job with the Colts, it would have never happened. So thanks a lot, guys. See you Saturday.
All right. That's Rick Venturi right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm talking right now about cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer. You think I was refreshed yesterday? Yes. Did I get plenty of refreshment yesterday? Yes. Okay. Did everybody around me? Yes. Okay. When that was said and done, we sat around. We had some cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Lights, and it was just good, clean fun for the whole family. Well, not for the whole family. I got a little off on the award ceremony. Probably said a few words. Probably shouldn't have said. Maybe that happened. But you know what? It was fun. We all had fun. I hope you had fun. Everybody that was out there. I hope that, you know what? You were as refreshed as I was. I was make sure I wasn't dehydrated. Okay. I was not dehydrated. That's for sure. Cause I had my cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Lights. It's the world's most refreshing beer. It's the official beer when you play golf. It's the official beer when you're playing poker. It's the official beer when you're just hanging out with your buddies. It's the official beer of watching football. It's the official beer of all I do. Make it your official beer. Coors Light.
Years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!